welcome to A Mindful Emergence on WPVM. My name is Eddie LeSure, and I'll be joined very soon by my co-host Margaret Kirshner and our special guest for this week. We come to you live every Monday evening from 7 to 8 p.m. at 103.7 on your FM radio dial, or you can stream us globally at WPVMFM.org. This program is also rebroadcast Thursday mornings from 9 to 10 a.m. Our focus each week is on various aspects of recovery. Addiction, trauma, wellness, healing, self-care, and personal transformation, as we take an in-depth and informative look into approaches that can be integrated into daily life. All our programs are underwritten by A Mindful Emergence, a locally owned LLC that's committed to bringing integrated solutions into addiction recovery and trauma relief, utilizing body-centered mindfulness, self-compassion, and therapeutic movement practices. For more information, our website is amindfulemergence.com. And a warm welcome to our listeners tuning in once again to Mindful Emergence and also to my co-host, Margaret Kirshner. Welcome, Margaret.
I'm happy to be here.
And to our special guest this week, welcome into the studio, Dr. Leslie Temme. How are you, Leslie?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm great. I appreciate you coming in. The topic this week, advances in the integration of yoga and other mindfulness practices into addiction recovery. Now, you've worked in the field of education and addiction as a social worker, an educator for 30 years. And I wonder if you could kind of give us an overview on what we're going to be talking about this week.
Certainly. I had hoped that we could take a look at what some of the research is saying in relation to both yoga and meditation. We have some new research that is showing some real benefits of these practices, and also to take a look at what is actually happening out in the field.
Great. Well, and of course, you are not only a licensed clinical social worker, but you're also a trained yoga teacher.
That's correct. Uh-huh.
And of course, Margaret has been teaching how many, 17, 18 years now?
Yes, 17 years.
17 years you've been teaching yoga, and you're certified as a trauma-sensitive yoga therapist. Mm-hmm. So that's a wonderful addition to the conversation. I guess the first question I want to ask you, Leslie, is what got you interested in, let's start with yoga, first of all.
What got me interested? You know, it was almost an accident. I was a member of a gym, and I saw that they had a yoga class at a certain time that I happened to be there. And I went in, I took the class, and I still to this day remember what I felt like leaving, and I felt like a different person.
Wow.
Can you describe more what that feeling was like?
I felt whole. You know, they talk about practices that promote wellness and wholeness. And for the first time that I can remember, I truly felt like a whole person.
Mm. And now, were you already working in the field of mental health?
Yes, I had been working in the field of addiction at that time, probably for at least 10 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
So talk about your background. Are you from this area, Carolina?
No, I am from Long Island, New York.
Okay,
in case you can't tell.
Well, I kind of knew that, but you know. And so where'd you go to school and everything? And
I got my master's at Adelphi University and went right into addiction treatment and worked in a variety of different settings.
Is that up in the New York area?
In New York. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And why did you decide to get into this field of study?
Well, as a person in long-term recovery, I wanted to give back. I wanted to contribute to work with people who were suffering from addiction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I can relate.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice to be part of the solution rather than just kind of part of the problem.
Huh? Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. And what brought you to Carolina? How long have you been here?
I've been here now, I believe, 7 years. I came to work in academia, and I did so for about 4 years, and then decided that I wanted to really pursue working more closely with clients and bringing them the practices that I so firmly believe in.
One-on-one, that face-to-face.
Mm-hmm.
So you're currently a yoga teacher at the Embodiment Center.
That's correct.
Which is also true. Margaret's going to start teaching there very soon.
Mm-hmm.
What is that? Where is it?
The Embodiment Center is on Cox Avenue here in Asheville, downtown, under new ownership, Kat Matlock. And she is bringing in a variety of different practices. And I also want to say that she is very service-oriented and really looking to fill needs in the community. And yeah. I so appreciate that. It's really part of what I believe yoga is about.
And you offer yoga for recovery.
Yes, we're going to be beginning a yoga for recovery. Both Margaret and I will be offering classes. And our hope is to bring in more people in recovery and be able to show them how yoga can really support and enhance their recovery. Yeah.
And we'll get into that very, very shortly. And you're also doing a yoga nidra class.
I did a yoga nidra class, and I will periodically be doing yoga nidra. Mm-hmm. Yoga nidra is a meditation, and it's a little bit different, and it has some, I believe, direct application to addiction that we can talk about.
Yeah. And you also are doing a class on alignment, an alignment-based class.
Yes, I do a regular alignment-based.
The structural stuff.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And you work with Cognitive Connection down in Hickory?
It's in Hickory. They have a location in Hickory and a location in Morganton. And I've been going and working with groups doing meditation and yoga.
And you also offer continuing education courses where you're bringing this to mental health professionals as well. And a little bit later, maybe you can mention some of those events.
Yep.
But I know Margaret is itching to get into talking about yoga with you.
Yes.
So I'm going to turn things over to her right now.
All right. Well, we know that the in the recovery world, the yoga and the 12 steps really dovetail with each other very well. And, you know, when I take a look at the 11th step, for example, it's about prayer and meditation.
Mm-hmm.
And so the meditation that you offer really fits very well. And I think yoga, too, can sometimes be thought of as a conversation with the divine.
Mm-hmm.
By moving the body, we get to experience something that feels like more. As you described, you felt whole after your first class. After my first class, I was thinking, what did I feel? I felt empowered.
Mm-hmm.
I felt strong in my body, but also kind of emotionally nourished or fortified. So I think there's so much to it that helps and works so well for people who are recovering from anything, be it, you know, recovering from surgery or illness or injury or recovering from addiction or depression or anxiety.
Yes.
So there are so many ways. And I'm curious about your thoughts, too, about the 12 steps and yoga and meditation.
Well, when we look at the 12 steps, there's also the elements of awareness and acceptance, and both meditation and yoga work to cultivate those qualities. So as I become more aware of my body, as I become more aware of my thoughts, that can help me to monitor and be more fully in my body and cognizant of what I'm doing. You know, as a person in recovery and in other areas, the idea of habits and that, you know, our behaviors are so habitual. We often don't take the time to think about what we're doing. It's just habit, one thing after another. And one of the things that I learned on the yoga mat was to pay attention to my habits. Mm. And as I was able to do that, what I realized was that that was carrying over into my life, and that I became more aware of the habits that I was in my daily life, whether it was getting a cup of coffee, whether it was getting in the car, and how I was mindless in so much of what I did. And so now I can be more fully present and mindful in word and deed, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
even something so simple as taking a deep breath, or mm-hmm. taking a step and feeling your feet on the floor, feeling mm-hmm. your hand on a doorknob or in the dishwater. So we can bring these kinds of activities and skills into our daily lives. And most people, especially those in recovery, can benefit from learning about and practicing self-care.
Correct.
So let's talk a little bit about, you know, your self-care, what you've learned through your practice of mindfulness and movement.
Well, I've learned that I need to pay attention when I am feeling stressed. I need to pay attention to those messages that my body is giving me. There are parts of my body that will become tense. Certainly my behavior, I become a little shorter in my conversation or my relationships, and that I need to have a balanced day, and I need to have a balanced day every day, not just Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So I have a routine that is specific to including certain practices, and I make that a priority so that I can not only be whole, but I can feel good and I can be present, and that I am not kind of off the beam.
It sounds like you've learned some things through your practice that bring you back mm-hmm. into that balanced place, or resilient zone is the kind of the buzzword term these days.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I thought I might mention the trauma-informed yoga and what that's all about. And what science has figured out is that mind and body is connected.
Yes.
And as we are really embracing that...
What took them so long, huh?
I know, right? we realize that trauma memories are actually stored somatically or in our bodies. Mm-hmm. I like the expression, our issues are in our tissues.
Yeah.
And so trauma treatment must include the body. We can't just mm-hmm. talk about it, understand ourselves, and change our behavior in our heads. We actually have to use our bodies. We have to involve the body somehow. And so trauma-sensitive yoga is kind of like bottom-up, thinking about using the body to move through whatever issues there might be, instead of just intellectualizing it. And so there's this term nowadays, embodiment, and that's the name of the center that we're both having classes at. And embodiment means really just being aware of the body and what's happening on the inside.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so I'm really fascinated with how trauma-informed yoga is helpful for people moving through trauma.
Yeah, and what have the studies shown that you've paid attention to, Leslie?
Well, the studies are showing now that there's absolutely benefits from yoga in relation to anxiety and depression, and that the ability to self-regulate stressors is enhanced when somebody has engaged in a regular yoga practice. So if I can self-regulate the way my body responds, to me that is that's phenomenal. To have thought that 15 years ago, I would have said, no way, you know, and I was a great reactor, you know, and that was probably the first benefit that I noticed in myself was I didn't react the way I used to situations outside of myself. And for people in recovery, that's one of the basic tenets that we teach them or try to teach them is that not only is it an inside job, but you know, that we don't have control over situations outside of ourselves. We can only control the way we react to them.
Yeah, we talk about in the work that we do, developing a relationship with our thoughts and our feelings and taking responsibility for the fact that there are other people can't make us mad.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, but we're asking them to go into their bodies and pay attention to what's happening. What have you noticed? And in your own experience in early recovery, and also among the people that you work with, how difficult is it for them to go to their bodies?
Oh, I think it's really difficult for people to actually feel what is going on inside. And so we take it slowly. There's a lot of invitation rather than a command. So, you know, people are invited at their own slower pace to notice simple things like their feet on the floor or their bottom in the chair. Or the feeling of breath coming in and moving out of their lungs. And it helps them to build tolerance, to build the ability to be with sensations, some of which might be slightly uncomfortable, some of which might be pleasant, some of which might be kind of mundane and ordinary, and then some might be a little bit kind of at the edge, the extreme edge. And so it helps people to have a positive relationship to one's body, to help them to understand that they can make choices. They can kind of dip a toe in, step back. They can kind of turn up the volume or turn down the volume. They can be with other people in a room and move with them and notice that other people are also moving and we're kind of finding a rhythm together and a right. synergy.
Yeah. If you just tuned in, you're listening to A Mindful Emergence on the new WPBM LP in Asheville, North Carolina. And Margaret and I are joined in the studio this week by Dr. Leslie Temme, talking about advances in the integration of yoga and other mindfulness practices into addiction recovery.
So the purpose of yoga is to calm the fluctuations of the mind. And when we spoke earlier about, Margaret, you mentioned how science is now realizing the connection and what the research is talking about. And Eddie, you said, well, what took them so long? When you look at the philosophy of yoga, the ancient yogis knew this. And what they talk about is now being validated by Western science to some degree. There's some difficulties there, but it is starting to happen. And we have been able to research and investigate meditation for quite a while now. But yoga was more difficult because we didn't have a measurement to measure what yoga was actually doing. And so finally, we're coming up with different measurements that are saying, that are allowing us to say yoga, the outcome is such and such and such, which is real advances.
And I was so excited this month because I read an article. It says trauma-sensitive yoga became the first yoga program in the world listed as an evidence-based practice for the treatment of psychological trauma by SAMHSA's National Registry of Evidence-Based Programs and Practices.
That's a big deal.
Right. It is a big deal. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Finally.
Yeah, it means that it works. Yep. It means that there's evidence behind it and it is effective. And some of the ways that trauma-sensitive yoga differs from other types of yoga is that the emphasis is on helping students feel safe, offering choices about how to move and when to move, and even permission to simply opt out to watch or just listen. Sometimes when I'm teaching a yoga class in a treatment facility, the thing that's different is that the people there don't always want to be there. They're not choosing to pay for a yoga class and go in and, you know, move their bodies willingly. Right. They are encouraged by staff to be there. And sometimes
maybe a judge.
Maybe a judge. Yeah. Criminal justice system. Various reasons. And they're afraid and they're hurting and they're psychologically not in a balanced state. So there's many, many obstacles for their full participation. And as a yoga teacher, I think it's okay for them to simply be in the room and be respectful. And to make choices about how and when to move could actually be a very corrective, healthy experience for them.
Absolutely.
And, you know, if they've been forced and if they've been coerced or manipulated or put in situations that have been trauma-filled and chaotic and painful and not at all in their control, this is a different experience.
Absolutely.
Teachers would not be commanding. They wouldn't bark out commands. They would offer choices, and their language is very invitational in this kind of a class. They wouldn't walk around the class behind the participants either. So the teacher would always be seen by the students, and the students are able to move as they like. The teacher doesn't typically come over and adjust the students' bodies in this particular kind of a class, and she wouldn't turn off the lights unexpectedly, things like that. So, you know, there are little subtle ways that a class can be created and modified to meet the needs of people and help them feel like they're in a space that's safe and they can participate without feeling like they always need to be hypervigilant. They can perhaps maybe practice letting down their guard even for a moment. For example, in a position where your head is down on the floor, like there's a position in yoga called Child's Pose. And some people may be reluctant to put their heads down and be that vulnerable even for a second, or to close their eyes in relaxation might not be comfortable for them.
Right. Yeah, I would agree.
And what have you, what does the research tell us, Leslie, about the brain, the nervous system, how yoga is affecting people?
Well, what the research is suggesting is that, and there's similar outcomes in relation to meditation, and what the research is looking at in relation to the brain is particularly the idea of slowing down the amygdala and quieting the noise in the prefrontal cortex so that the brain is able to reason well. Because for most of our clients, trauma, addiction, there is the what they call the overactive amygdala. And so and that's the fight or flight response. And so that response is so automatic that when we as treatment professionals ask our clients to think something through, they are not capable of doing that because their amygdala has fired, their prefrontal cortex is filled with what I call noise. And so in order to sort that out, it takes some time. And you know what? It's too late. The idea of thinking something through is just not something I am capable of. So if we can slow that down, quiet the prefrontal lobes to allow some reasoning to enter into the picture, then the response rate is slowed down.
And that frontal lobe also has something to do with impulse control, doesn't
it? Right, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And that stop, start and stop response,
yeah. And that amygdala, when it's firing, when it's in fight or flight, that's really going to activate the survival brain and jack up the nervous system,
isn't
it?
Absolutely.
So talk about some of how yoga might help calm down the nervous system.
Mm-hmm. Well, and again, you know, the purpose of yoga is to calm the fluctuations of the mind. So when we do that, when we practice in a structured and organized way to slow down and become aware, that helps begin the process of being able to recognize and slow the stress response. Particularly, Yoga Nidra was the meditation that I, and that's a meditation practice, and I used that in my research when I was working on my PhD. And I specifically chose that meditation because it was led. It was not Vipassana, focusing on the breath. I felt like that was too vast for people who were in treatment, especially in early recovery. And so the idea that I was talking to them and leading them, I thought was important so that they wouldn't get lost. And then to move through the layers of body sensation, breath sensation, thoughts, feelings, and emotions takes an individual through that process.
And talk a little bit about...
Before you do that, before you ask that question, Margaret, this is a great opportunity for you to plug your Wednesday night class.
So if you're, yoga nidra class.
If you're listening to the rebroadcast on Thursday morning, it's too late. But
Well, I've got a Wednesday evening class this coming Wednesday, which is December 6th, but it's the first Wednesday of each month, and it's held at Asheville Insight Meditation. It's what Leslie was referring to. It's a yoga nidra experience. We start off with a little bit of slow yoga, very mindful, slow movement. And then we eventually move down onto the floor where we're lying down, and you're guided through the experience of being in your body with lots of options.
Right.
I was going to ask you, Leslie, to speak about...
So what time does that start, Wednesday?
Sorry. 7 to 8:30.
Wednesday.
First Wednesday.
Asheville Insight Meditation.
Asheville Insight Meditation, right. First Wednesday of every month. And there's a little bit of a difference between yoga nidra, which is a body-based experience, versus another kind of guided meditation that might lead you into a nature scene.
Yes, correct. And I have students and clients ask me, please, can we do a guided imagery? And I say to them, you know, that's not the kind of practice that I'm here to offer you, because guided imagery will take you somewhere. And what we are trying to do with these practices, whether it's meditation or yoga, is self-inquiry, to go inside and to learn what is my body telling me, what is my body need, and it is through those kinds of practices that we can discover that. And what a discovery. You know, I do remember the first time I could actually feel something in my body. And after medicating myself for so many years, it was a little scary, but it was really an eye-opener in relation to how shut down I think I was, and how I had no clue what my body was telling me. And the idea of integrating body, mind, and spirit, that was way beyond where I was at that time.
So I'm wondering if you two could talk about working with the discomfort. Mm. When they start to encounter the discomfort, how you help them work with that in a safe way.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to go for it?
Well, just being in the body, first of all, let's say you're tired. So you're coming into a class, you don't really want to be there, you're tired. You know, I might invite people to just notice, what does tired feel like? Or what does restless feel like? Let's be a little bit curious about the actual physical sensations. And then I might say, where is the sensation? Mm-hmm. So if you're tired, there might be a heaviness to your limbs. Or if you're restless, there might be kind of a itchiness, like a desire to go and move your legs, move your hands, and get up and not stay still. So just to be curious about things like that, or being hungry. What does hungry feel like? Mm-hmm. Where does it show up in the body?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And particularly in the yoga nidra practice that I use, which was created by Dr. Richard Miller in California, there is being with the sensation, being with the feeling, being with the thought. And then the invitation is to either stay with that, or he works with opposites. So if I'm feeling heavy, then can I find lightness somewhere? And so how do I do that? And there's this process of being heavy, being light, going back and forth. And what that ends up doing is it really mediates the feeling. And so then I can just be.
And when we're in our bodies, we're in the here and now.
Exactly. Yep.
Mm-hmm. That's the beauty. We're not in the future. Mm-hmm. We're not in the past. We're here in the golden moment.
Yeah, because people create a story. Yeah. You know, if they're feeling tired, they may talk to other people. Oh, I'm so tired. I didn't get enough sleep. I'm feeling tired. I'm feeling tired. And that's their mantra throughout the day. Mm-hmm. So, of course. Mm-hmm.
Well, and they project.
Yes. Yep.
Well, boy, am I going to be a mess later.
Right.
Yes.
And then this is going to happen. And then they're catastrophizing. And it's out of control. It's it's a train wreck.
Yeah. And it becomes cyclical. Yes. You know, and it becomes habitual.
Yes.
You know, our thought patterns are as habitual as our behaviors. And can we interrupt that? And can we begin to notice and change them?
Yeah. I've heard the term from the mindfulness-based relapse prevention model, autopilot.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Interrupting autopilot.
Yeah.
And I was listening to a talk yesterday where someone was talking about paying attention to our thoughts and our emotions. And then they said, take a breath and make a U-turn. I thought, this is great.
Yeah.
Take a U-turn, come back to the thoughts and the feelings and go, all right, what's happening right now? What am I feeling? What am I noticing? Rather than autopilot right down into reactivity.
Yeah.
U-turn back. That's great. I'm stealing that.
Yeah.
I'm
going to
use
phrase.
That. That's
it's
great.
A good phrase. Yes, it really is. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you have another question before we go to break, Margaret? And the reason I'm prompting Margaret is she is going to be going and teaching yoga to some people in non-residential aftercare and leaving very soon. But I want to give you an opportunity before we go to break.
There's so much that I could say, and I'm not quite sure what to choose to say. But there's this new term called interoception. It's the ability to receive and to read our experience on the inside, respond. And we're actually developing a greater capacity to feel.
Mm-hmm.
And we're also developing, as a result, a greater capacity to emotionally experience the ups and the downs of life.
Yeah.
Right.
So when
does
this class start that you guys are going to be doing?
So we are beginning a recovery series, and Margaret will be teaching on Saturdays from 2:30 to 3:30, and then I will be teaching on Mondays from 3 to 4:30.
And these classes will be held at the Embodiment Center on Cox Avenue, which is downtown Asheville. My class is going to be called Resilient Recovery.
Yes.
Kind of focused on very simple techniques, how to bring yourself back into that balanced state if you are stuck on high, hypervigilant, manic, and restless, or stuck on low, hopeless and despairing and depressed and not motivated to get out and engage with other people. How to get back to that feeling like you can think, you can engage, you can make good decisions, you can feel okay in your body again.
Right. Yeah.
Great.
Got the frontal lobe working.
Right.
We like that.
Yeah.
I do better with frontal lobe than in amygdala.
Yes, yes.
All right. Well, we're going to stop and take a break. And you're listening to A Mindful Emergence on 103.7 WPBM-FM in Asheville, North Carolina. And I'm going to return with Dr. Leslie Temme in just a few minutes after this brief musical pause. And I picked out a piece of music by Mavis Staples.
Light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. All in my home, I'm gonna let it shine. All in my room, I'm gonna let it shine. Shine now. The road is dark, the way was long. Kept on singing that freedom song. My God promised me a rainbow sign. Just gotta let my little light shine. Don't give up, don't back down. Don't let the liar turn you around. My heart's fixed, made up in mine. I'm going out and let light shine. Sure gonna let my little light shine. All in the streets, I'm gonna let it shine. On the battlefield, I'm gonna let it shine. See, now I ain't gonna fight no rich man's war. That ain't what God wanna use me for. Killing folk ain't in my line. Sure ain't no way to let my little light shine. Shine on me, shine on me. Let the light from the lighthouse shine on me. You can't fool all the people all the time. Get together, let our little light shine. Let it shine, let it shine. Let it shine, let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. When the call, let it shine. When the liar calls, let it shine. In my home,
we have Mavis Staples bringing it, and a tune that she does called This Light of Mine. This is Eddie LeSure, and from 7 to 8 p.m. every Monday on WPBM, Margaret Kirshner and I are joined by guests who share their unique experience and expertise in their effort to support personal and planetary healing and wholeness. In addition to tuning in at 103.7 FM or WPBMFM.org, Mondays from 7 to 8 p.m. when we're live, and Thursdays from 9 to 10 a.m. for the rebroadcast, past programs are archived on our show host page for your convenience. So if you want to locate this or other past programs, it's easy. You go to our website, WPBMFM.org, and you go to the schedule and select this program, which is listed Mondays at 7. And it's easy. You can just listen to any program whenever you feel like it. We are broadcasting live December 4th, 2017, and this is program number 100. We did our first program in November of 2015, and we're just so grateful to all the guests who have come in and shared their experience and knowledge. And I'm personally appreciative to Devine Dial, who has given me the opportunity to come in and do this program with Margaret every week over the last couple of years. So all our shows are made possible by A Mindful Emergence, LLC, our Asheville-based company that offers classes, workshops, and one-on-one support for individuals living in recovery or wanting to experience recovery. We also offer trainings for CEU credits to healthcare professionals. You can access more information online at amindfulemergence.com. You can also find us on Facebook and LinkedIn. And just wanted to tip you off, AARP has an announcement. If you're living in Buncombe, Henderson, or McDowell counties, you're invited for food, refreshments, and entertainment at no cost as AARP celebrates the Disrupt Aging Community Health Challenge. So in Asheville, it's Sunday, December 10th from 4 to 7 at the Salvage Station. In Marion, it'll be Monday the 11th from 12 to 2, and it'll be in Hendersonville on Tuesday, December 12th. Those will be at the YMCAs in Marion in Hendersonville. If you want more information, you can call 575-2904. So let's return back to our guest, Leslie Temme, now. And now you work with people at a facility that is treatment?
Or yes, that's correct. Addiction treatment
facility. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious if you were, this is kind of a two-part question. The first thing is, if someone came to you and said, well, you know, I'm kind of shopping treatment centers, aftercare centers, I am interested in yoga and meditation, what kind of questions should I be asking in order to get the real deal? And the second part of this is, you know, how are we moving forward in terms of understanding how to utilize these practices in addiction recovery?
Good question. If I were to advise a potential client looking for treatment that integrated yoga, meditation, and other mindfulness practices, I would suggest that they look at the training and background of not only the clinicians, but the people who are going to be implementing the practices. I think that as we talked earlier about the idea of mindfulness is a bit of a buzzword now. And
oh, yeah.
So what does that really mean? And clients and potential clients really can look and see what kind of training, what kind of background do the people have there.
So would it be helpful maybe if they've actually completed a program and gotten certified?
Oh, absolutely. And that is, yeah, and that's one of the things that I think is really important for us to pay attention to as we move forward in working in this way is, are the teachers certified? Are the clinicians understanding of the various practices, or is there just this reading of a meditation from a book, you know?
From a staff person who is well-intended, but
right.
not trained.
Right. Because, and there's a number of reasons for that. These practices have some real benefits, but there are also some risks.
Mm-hmm.
And the clinicians need to know what those are. Also, not every meditation is the same. Not every meditation is right for every person or population. I think there is the need perhaps to look at where a person is in recovery when we begin to use meditation and yoga. And as Margaret talked about earlier, you know, going very slowly, invitational, and not expecting clients in early recovery to do the same kind of meditation that perhaps clients could do later on.
Yeah, yeah, great. And what are we noticing? I mean, are we moving forward?
Well, I think there is more and more acknowledgement
of the benefits of these practices. I think more and more treatment facilities are open to the idea, much more so than when I first started this work, where my advisor in my PhD program, when I told her I wanted to study meditation, she said, "What? You better pick another topic, Leslie."
Yeah, what's the point of that?
And so I had to get all these old studies. It was quite a process. So having a background, having some education, bringing clinicians and yoga and meditation teachers together to talk about what are their experiences, the questions they might have, I think would be a way to go. I have also started doing some CEU work with the intention of working with the clinicians to help them understand what these practices can
continuing
bring.
Ed.
Yeah.
Continuing mm-hmm. education. Yeah.
Yeah.
So talk about that. You've got something scheduled, don't you?
I do. I have a CEU workshop titled Integrating Meditation into Clinical Practice. Very exactly what we were talking and exactly what we've been talking about. And really, my primary background was in meditation for many years. And the idea, again, is to not necessarily teach clinicians to be meditation teachers, but to recognize when meditation can and cannot, is beneficial. How do they make a determination? Can they do it themselves? Should they refer out? Should they bring in a meditation teacher? There's a lot of variables that I think mm-hmm. clinicians are not always aware of.
So when and where is this training? You don't have that information at the top of
it's
your...
on Merriman Avenue.
Okay, but they can find out at your website.
At my website.
Which, and what is that?
www.leslietemme.com.
So spell that out, Leslie Temme.
LeslieTemme.
.com.
.com, yes.
So coming up in, is it 2018?
I have one coming up this month, and then 2018, I have a whole list of mm-hmm. These kinds of CEU workshops where we will talk about the different practices and working with the clinicians to mm-hmm. help them understand and gain some knowledge base in regards to the practices that are out there.
And they can not only learn these to support the recovery of their clients, but for their own benefit
yes.
as well. Talk
yes.
about that.
Yeah.
Talk about why it might be useful for someone working with this population to have their own personal practice.
Well, there is a budding research now that talks about, especially in addiction treatment, the stressors and the difficulty that clinicians can have working with this population. There's a lot of recidivism, a lot of relapse. It is a chronic relapsing disorder.
Mm-hmm. Death. Clients
and,
die.
Right.
Sometimes.
Overdose.
Yeah. Happens.
And so in order to sustain as a healthy practice, as a clinician, I need to take care of myself. So if I learn to integrate some of these practices into my daily life, then I'm better able to not only talk about them, but to embody them.
So did you start yoga or meditation first?
I actually started meditation first, and my experience with meditation was what eventually gave me the impetus to do my PhD work. Mm. I was working in an outpatient program, seeing the same people I had seen 5-10 years ago, coming back in, and I went to meditation every day during lunchtime. And one day I walked up the stairs and I said, you know, this would be so great for the clients. But at that time, nobody was doing it, and there was no evidence to show what these benefits were.
And what were you practicing with a group or doing it on your own?
I was practicing with a group. Yeah, mm-hmm. I practiced meditation with a group.
Was that still up in New York?
In New York. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And actually, I started meditation with a Zen priest,
mm-hmm.
a woman.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So talk about what your practice looks like.
My practice is I do an insight or Vipassana meditation in the morning. I've started to change it up as I've done my work at Cognitive Connection. It's interesting how when you dive into that work, you begin to see things. And so I've now integrated more loving kindness meditation, both for myself and then in the group that I do. I have more affirmation work. I think that clients can connect with the affirmation, the idea of affirmation as a mantra meditation. So I've started to do more
setting
of that.
Setting intention.
Yeah.
Talk about what is insight meditation. What does that look like when you sit on a cushion, or are you like me and you sit in a chair?
I sit on a cushion most times.
I'm done with cushions.
You're done with cushions.
My body said, what are you thinking?
Yeah.
So you sit down on the cushion, and what do you do?
I focus on my breath. I let go of any incoming stimulation, and I simply focus on my breath.
So you're not trying to stop thinking?
No.
Good luck with that, right?
Right. The thoughts come, but I've learned to let the thoughts come and let the thoughts go and not be attached to whatever that thought is, whatever the story that comes out of that thought. Thought, sound, smell, sensation, you know, there are many stories that can be attached to any of those senses. So to notice them and just let them go.
And how does that help you?
It helps me to not react. It helps me to stay centered in myself and to be fully present in the moment because I'm not caught up in whatever that story is.
Yeah. And you notice that every experience is impermanent, don't you?
Right.
It's transitory.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I can remember times when I had a thought, I got so caught in this obsessive loop.
Yes.
I thought I would never stop thinking about it, or I had sensations in my body, cravings.
Yes.
Because I am a person in long-term recovery. Cravings, and I thought, it's never going to go away, but that's not true, is it?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Do you remember where we met, Leslie?
Do I remember where we met? I'm not so sure I do.
It was on retreat.
That's right.
That's right.
That is right.
Southern Dharma Retreat Center.
Yes.
You and I, and this was, I'm going to say 2010?
Probably.
2010 with Kevin Griffin.
Yes, yes.
Talk about bringing meditation and 12 steps together.
Right.
Yeah, he's author of One Breath at a Time, Buddhism and the 12 Steps.
Yes, yes.
And that's where we met. We were both, and have you done any subsequent retreats with him?
I've done one more with him, yes.
Yeah. And of course, I co-teach with him now, the last 3 years. And what a wonderful opportunity that is for me. You do other retreats as well?
I have not. You know, I was also a participant for a long time at Kripalu.
Oh, yeah. Where Margaret was trained.
Yes. And I went to Kripalu for years, and that's where I met my yoga nidra teacher, Dr. Richard Miller. And so what has happened for me is moving down here, I've been to Southern Dharma a few times. I have not found a place that I have really been able to get to again. But there's always another possibility.
Oh, yes. So imagine that someone's sitting here in front of you. They're in recovery. Maybe they're not in the very initial stages of recovery because we have various stages, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say maybe they got a year under their belt and they're working a program. They've got a sponsor and you know, their life is, you know, they've gotten themselves a job and so on. So they kind of have their feet on the ground and they come to you and they say, Leslie, I've never done yoga, but I think it might really be good for me. And I haven't really done meditation and I've heard that would really be good. I'd like to do both of these. What would you suggest, besides coming to your class over at the Embodiment Center, which would probably be a great suggestion, what would you say to them about getting a meditation practice started and a yoga practice started?
Well, I would tell them, number one, we are so fortunate here in Asheville. There are so many resources for people to access and that they and then to explain to them perhaps the different kinds of meditation and what the different meditation centers here in town offer, and to have somebody either at the meditation center or a clinician who is following them in this process, so that they have somewhere to talk about what the different effects are, what perhaps their experience is, and they can process that with someone.
Mm-hmm. Find someone to be with.
Yeah.
Community. And, of course, there are so many yoga centers in town they can pick from. Mm-hmm. But how important is it to pick the right level of class?
Oh, that's very important.
Maybe not start out with Ashtanga?
No. I would certainly start out with something like a gentle yoga. Gentle flow.
Restorative, maybe?
Restorative. In the Iyengar system, a level one. Mm-hmm. A beginner's class. And again, Margaret and I are specifically going to be offering classes for people in recovery starting in January.
Okay. You talked about loving kindness practice. Mm-hmm. Explain what that is and why that's helpful.
Well, the loving kindness practice that I use and that I practice is a practice where starting with myself, I use different mantras to cultivate loving kindness for myself. And then the process is that once I have done that, then I begin to work to cultivate loving kindness for those that I'm close with, my family, or my partner, people that I love, and then move.
Don't forget me.
Of course.
I can use all the help I can get.
And the process is then to move beyond, to then cultivate loving kindness for people that maybe we see as we...
Casual
acquaintances, mm-hmm. Where you go get your coffee in the morning. But the end of the process is to be able to cultivate loving kindness for those people that genuinely create angst in our life. And when I first started practicing this particular meditation, I remember thinking, wow, they talk in the 12-step program about praying for those people, right?
Yeah.
And so, and at the time I wasn't too much into prayer, but I was able to translate the loving kindness and see the connection and how it helped me to then be able to let go of those feelings that are just hurting.
Yeah. So it's a way of developing a relationship with our own suffering, isn't it?
Absolutely.
In a kind way.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I know I can only speak for myself, but when I was in early recovery, I had so much self-judgment and I had shame.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that is, in working with clients, that is an important piece to also know, because clients typically have the most trouble cultivating loving kindness for themselves.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, any last thoughts that you want to share before we button up?
Well, I just want to thank you for this opportunity. I think that this area is blossoming, and it is important that people can know more about what's happening in this field. So
yes.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Well, and thank you for coming in and sharing so much this week, Leslie. Dr. Leslie Temme, joining us on A Mindful Emergence. And thank you to our listeners as well for joining me this week. And I just want to let you know that if you enjoy this show, make sure you check out A Better World on Thursdays at 5 p.m. with McNair Ezard, a similar show where he looks at people and organizations that are really making a difference out there. And also tune in next week for program 101 with Michael Fagan, a psychotherapist who's going to talk about assisting clients in the chronic progression of recovery. So see you next week.